Let's go to the top of the hill.
And here she comes, and the valley roars. Cometh the hour, cometh the legend. Greatness, Wicks has done it.
Jungle Edge is going well. It's a muddy marble.
Now declares Hicks. Fairly declares won it for Australia. They're on top of the world.
I'm on top of the world, eh? I'm on top of the world, eh?
With the voice of Victorian racing, Matt Hill.
It's that time of the week on Top of the Hill with Matty Hill, the voice of Victorian racing, star of racing.com, host of the Monday night after the last. There's nothing he can't do. How are you, Matty?
Oh, there's plenty I can't do. Don't worry about that, Michael. Good morning. And, I tell you what, it's a little bit frosty in Melbourne this morning, but, it's exciting just to already see the nominations for Caulfield on Saturday with the Lawrence and the Vane and the Quizette. We're in for a treat on the weekend.
It does warm the cockles of your heart, doesn't it, when you see the likes of Mystic Journey entered into a PB Lawrence, get to see Betty back in action, and those up-and-coming three-year-olds that we get to see. Now, Rupert Lee put out a little bit of a teaser earlier, and I've had a little bit of a look for those who want to have an early spec on Saturday. The horse that he was talking about, which goes around in the Vane. I'm just going to get this up now, Matty, because it could be an early moneymaker for the punters out there. I don't think the Vane market is up, but it's a two-year-old called, three-year-old now, called Ranting. It's only had two starts for Leon and Troy Corsons. It ran third at Caulfield. I'm not sure if you can remember it behind Forever Free, and then it went over to Morphettville Park. So that's a little sneaky that he has given us on Saturday as well. So put that in your little black book for Saturday.
Well, that's interesting because if you think back 12 months ago to this meeting, what a cracking day it was. It really did fire us right up for the spring of 2019 because Bivouac came out and won the Vane and Accelerates came out and won the Quizette. We were sort of thinking, wow, how good is this? And it really is a turning point. Then, of course, the Mystic Journey came out and won the Lawrence. So, and Be Good to Your Mother creams them in the Regal Roller. So it was a wonderful day last year, and a lot of those horses are back, in particular Be Good to Your Mother and Mystic Journey. So really looking forward to it.
It may be history repeating because both Be Good to Your Mother and I think Mystic Journey will be hard to beat on Saturday. I'm intrigued to see how the Sandgropers go. Arcadia Queen and also Regal Power. What are your thoughts on them?
Well, this is where the race meeting is going to tell us a lot. Obviously, the tricky part for the punter is how wound up all of these horses are. But I'm a big fan of Regal Power. It's such an adaptable racehorse. And we've even got their sprinter coming over as well that's nom for the Regal Roller. So the Grant and Alana Williams team, the pink with the white cross, the Bob Peters colours, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. No doubt about that.
Yeah, Showmanship's a horse you mentioned has won 5 from 6. I'm intrigued for you, Matty. You look ahead with the nominations when you're preparing for a big race day. How soon do you start preparing during the week?
Well, I must confess, I look at the noms on the Monday purely just looking forward to the Saturday. But obviously, we have another race meeting tomorrow at Sandown to worry about first, and we've got into the form for that. So we'll get through tomorrow, and then I'll look at the fields as early as tomorrow afternoon between races at Sandown, try and get my head around them. And I think I heard Dean Lester say once that he spends, you know, 2 or 3 days leading up to the Saturday, even though he's put his tips down, he thinks about it all the way through to Saturday, and I'm a little bit the same. You get to the Saturday afternoon and you're pretty locked in with your selections, but by Friday, I've usually had a look at the colours, printed them out, and probably spent 4 or 5 hours on the meeting just having a look at statistics and their previous runs. So the prep's enjoyable, and I do enjoy sitting in the office on a Friday and really nutting it out.
And you do like a little punt. You play quaddies most weeks, don't you?
I do, yeah. Love the quaddie. Breaks my heart every week. In fact, I think most of the time I've got a group of us that have a quaddie and we get the quaddie and lose. A lot of punters would understand that. Our quaddies are a little bit like lotto numbers on a weekly basis. But I do like playing the quaddies and I like finding something at a good price. If I can find something that I like from the tapes that, you know, is around $20, I'll have a little spec on that. But as Bruce McAvaney once said, you'd prefer to call a good race and lose $5,000 than win $5,000 and call a bad race. So it doesn't really drive
me. Is that true?
Much. Yeah, it is true. I'd prefer to walk away on a Saturday night calling well and doing a good job than winning money. But look, if you do win a little bit of cash on the side, it's a good bonus, isn't it?
There's no doubt about that. Interesting thing watching the jump outs yesterday, and unfortunately during this COVID period, we've got no official trials. So I know for a lot of punters out there, trawling through jump outs is difficult to identify the horses, and things like the trial files. I know the race club has a great system where you can just punch in the horse's name and it brings up the jump outs, and racing.com have them from big meetings like yesterday as well. But what are your thoughts about trying to get some calls on the jump outs, even if they're done post-race, with young aspiring callers or another caller that might be able to put a call over the top to help punters out?
Well, I think in particular the jump outs that we had, say, yesterday at Flemington, where horses of the ilk of Russian Camelot were going around, I think they're quite professional the way that they're shot. You're right, it would have to be done post-production, because a lot of the jump outs, I think, for instance, yesterday there were a jump out up the straight and then there was some done on the circle, I think. So you wouldn't logistically be able to have a race caller around the track. But I think going forward, you know, jump outs have become a massive part of the form reference for the punters, and they're so easily accessible now online. There would be probably a way of having young race callers, up and coming, you know, aspiring callers doing them. I know for a fact that Bendigo has done it with young Dane Barry, who's a great young talent. He's been calling the jump outs at Bendigo, but that's on Bendigo Jockey Club's payroll, if you like, and the jump outs are controlled, and the vision is controlled by each and every club. So it's not under the banner of Racing Victoria or Racing.com. So when there's official barrier trials, they'll put one of the professional race callers to that. Unfortunately, the jump outs are still seen as just run by the respective race clubs. So that's why you wouldn't have a race caller as such with them. So probably something we can look at, mainly for those main jump outs, I'd say, at Flemington and the city tracks, because, as you say, some very good horses are going around and punters are using jump outs more and more. But I think it'd be a good opportunity for an aspiring race caller. But at the moment, it is up to the race clubs.
Yeah, there's a good set of jump outs at Caulfield this morning. Tomorrow, I think, at Mornington, you've got Pippi and the likes who are jumping out as well. So this COVID period, it might be a time to experiment with something. Just on that, before we get to your call of the week, Matty, when you were cutting your teeth, I know Greg Miles was a great mentor for you. Do you have any aspiring young callers contacting you, or asking for advice how to break into the sport?
Yeah, there's two or three that are hovering around at the moment. And the one thing I certainly stress, one thing I'm a big believer in, is you have to have an education. You know, it's one thing wanting to be a race caller, and I was, you know, desperately wanting to do it when I was 14 or 15. But the one thing that I reflect on now is that thank goodness I completed my studies, because media in general is so fraught, as you know, Mick, trying to find opportunities along the way. And race calling, there's not that many opportunities. So education is the key. So if a 15 or 16-year-old came up to me and wanted to be a race caller, that's absolutely fine. But finish year 12, try and do a little bit of university if you can. And the crazy thing is, we may have discussed it previously, in the old days, as I would say, you'd go to the track and practice and use your little pair of binoculars and put the race calls into a dictaphone using a cassette player. Nowadays, a lot of the young race callers want to call off monitors. You know, they want to sit at home and call off the TV. So that's the sign of the times that we're living in.
Which is best from a professional standpoint? Is it, I know the same is occurring with football callers, and at the moment it's unbelievable what the callers are able to do, because they can't actually go to the ground, so they're just corning it off the screen, which is what we see at home, and it is seamless to be watching them on Fox and Channel 7. But you don't get that peripheral view. When you are calling a race, do you prefer to call through the binoculars, or do you use much off the monitor?
Well, it's a good question, because looking through binoculars, you tend to look at each horse individually. You know, it's amazing. We've got the most powerful set of binoculars, but you still don't get a great look at the entire field because you're concentrating on each horse. Whereas when you're watching it on a monitor, you can see the whole field in one go. So, say at a track like Flemington, I tend to use both. I'll have the binoculars and the monitor. And it makes sense to use the monitor because that's what everyone else is watching. So it would be silly, it would be remiss of the race caller not to take notice of what the viewer is actually watching themselves. And it's one of my pet peeves, and it's never going to be corrected, but believe it or not, most racetracks, the cameraman is in a completely different position to the race caller. So what I'm actually calling to the public is not what 100% of the viewers are actually seeing. So that always comes into consideration. But the camera shots are so good now, Mick. You know, during Cup Carnival week, we have helicopter shots and tracking shots and head-on shots, and, you know, it'd be silly not to use them.
This will lead us in beautifully to your call of the week, because I want to discuss how you actually call this type of race. But I'll let you intro and give us the reason of why you have chosen this as your call of the week, Matty.
Well, the thing is, Mick, we discussed it last week about the art form of race calling, and I mentioned how a race caller is defined by about 10 seconds sometimes of their career. You could call a race for for 40 years, and only about 10 seconds of that career can be replayed over and over again. And I wanted to just to talk about the art form of race calling, because in 1973, possibly the greatest race was ever run at Aintree, where the Australian horse Crisp was run down by Red Rum, who went on to win 3 Grand Nationals. And this race call inspired me as a young man. I've got a bit of an obsession, I must admit, with the Aintree Grand National. And if ever there was a race call that you would play to a young race caller, this one is it. It was called by Sir Peter O'Sullivan. He was the most famous race caller in the world at the time, so famous they knighted him. He called over 50 Grand Nationals. And have a listen to this race call with no hysteria. He would have known at the time he was calling something out of the box. Every word was perfect, and how descriptive it was. Have a listen to this.
Crisp still well clear with two fences left to jump in the 1973 National, and this great Australian chaser Crisp with 12 stone on his back and 10 stone 5 on the back of Red Rum, who's chasing him, and they look to have it absolutely to themselves at the second last, and Crisp is over and clear of Red Rum, who's just jumping it. A long way back in third are Spanish Steps and Hurricane Rock and Rouge Autumn, and then Lascargo, but coming to the final fence in the National now, and it's Crisp still going in great style with 12 stone on his back. He jumps it well. Red Rum is about 15 lengths behind him as he jumps it, and Dick Pittman coming to the elbow now in the National. He's got 250 yards to run, and Chris just wandering a little off a through line now. He's feeling a loose concentration. He's been out there on his own for so long, and Red Rum is making ground on him still as they come to the line. It's a hundred furlong to run now, 200 yards now for Crisp, and Red Rum still closing on him, and Crisp is getting very tired, and Red Rum is pounding after him. Red Rum is the one that's finishing the strongest. He's got to get up. Red Rum is going to win the National, and at the line, Red Rum has just snatched it from Crisp, and Red Rum is the winner, and Crisp is second. Lascargo's just coming up now to his third.
It still gives you brings the hair on the back of the neck up, because it's a phenomenal, as you said, probably the most famous international race involving an Aussie horse. And the diction, the tone, just perfection.
And also the fact that Crisp was obviously tiring. It was rather dramatic, and I think Sir Peter came out with the greatest race calling line of all time. I think it's a toss up between Bill Collins' Races into Equine Immortality and Sir Peter O'Sullivan to say, he's wandering off a true line. He's losing concentration. Mm. He's been out there on his own for so long. It's one of the most beautiful delivered lines at the perfect time. And, you know, as I say, we could call races for 30, 40 years and not deliver a line as apt and as timely as that. It was just perfect.
Well, Matt, you've got your own national experience because, as you said, you've been obsessed with the race, and they actually use multiple callers, for those who don't know, because the course is so big. explain what that experience was like, and then we're going to play a little snippet of your call where you actually called the finish of the 2018 National. But the first time you were involved in a National call, when was that?
Yeah, that was all the way back in 2004. I was lucky enough to go over and see the Grand National a couple of years earlier and met a few of the race callers, and they BBC Radio just happened to have a spot in 2004, and they thought it was going to be a great idea because there was an Englishman, an Irishman and a Scotsman on the commentary team, and if they threw an Aussie in the mix, it was going to be, well, it sounds like a joke, doesn't it?
But
it,
I was going to say, it sounds like a joke.
But it, it turned into a really interesting mix of voices, and so I got the chance to call a Features Brook for 6 years. It turned out it was just a great gig, and it's a fascinating part of the Grand National because the horses leave the race course proper and go out into the country fundamentally, and the callers are out on scaffolding, and the first time you get to see the 40 runners is when they're charging at you, jumping the biggest fence on the course. It's quite hair-raising, but that was a lot of fun. But back in 2018, I was invited to call the Englishman. John Hunt was actually overseas calling the Commonwealth Games, ironically, in Australia, and there was a spot available, and I was asked, invited to go and fill in for John, and it was a mighty thrill.
And you did it brilliantly, as you always do.
They come towards the elbow now with a furlong to go, and it's Tiger Roll. He'll stay all day. He's four lengths in front from his second Pleasant Company with 150 yards left to go. But it's Tiger Roll for Davy Russell. It's going to be Grand National glory at last. Tiger Roll in front. Six lengths to Pleasant Company. Tiger Roll getting a little bit wary. Pleasant Company with one final thrust. Tiger Roll stopping dramatically. Stopping dramatically. Pleasant Company's run. Interesting. Tiger Roll gripping on for dear life. Pleasant Company with a final thrust, and the judge might be required in the Grand National. May have lasted though. Bless the wings, Annabelle.
What a famous race to call, with the champ Tiger Roll capitulating in scenes so reminiscent of Crisp.
Yes, and there were three race callers in the grandstand that day, myself for BBC Radio, Richard Wills for ITV, and also Alan Howes, the on-course caller, and the three of us all virtually went the early crow. There was a lesson learnt there. When a horse is six lengths in front with 50 yards to go at the end of 7,200 metres, don't declare them. But, yeah, he capitulated Tiger Roll, but he went on to win it again, and, of course, he would have tried to go over the three-peat this year, but the race was canned due to COVID. But the one interesting thing about Tiger Roll is he, if he's able to win the Grand National next year, fundamentally will win it 3 years in a row. He'll match Red Rum's three Grand Nationals, but Red Rum didn't do them in a row. He was placed a couple of times in between his victories. He ran in five of them. But if Tiger Roll's able to win it, he will be the first horse to win it 3 years in a row. So that would be unbelievable.
Absolutely. Is it more difficult to call a Grand National or a Melbourne Cup?
They're different races. I mean, the Grand National, half of the battle is knowing the horses because there's 40 runners in the Grand National, and it's so frenetic. And the grandstand call is a lot different because by the time they've got to you, the field is thinned out. Whereas the Melbourne Cup, you're on your own. Probably the Melbourne Cup. I still think the Melbourne Cup's one of the tougher tasks. And the Grand National, for me, you know, it was one of those gigs that you don't have to call the whole race. But, yeah, probably the Melbourne Cup, mainly because of the pressure and the viewership. You know, there's so many people listening. I don't think we've actually got an exact figure on how many people watch the Melbourne Cup. It seems to increase every time. I think the last figure I heard was 650 million people. I don't know if that's possible, but that's the last thing I have to think about when the horses are moving into the gates.
Well, interesting. I got an SMS. There's a couple that I'll read out. One, this is a good question from a listener out there saying, are the race callers still conscious of the radio listeners out there, or are you calling for a TV audience?
No, absolutely call for the entire audience. I was brought up on probably the last generation of those callers that listened to races on the radio. There wasn't a lot of racing on TV when I was young. So I'm definitely calling for the radio also. I think that's what holds Australian race callers ahead of all of them around the world. The English call for television. There's not a lot of radio commentary in England. Same in America. There's virtually no radio commentary. They may broadcast the Kentucky Derby, I'm not sure, but there's virtually no racing radio in America. So as a result, Australian race callers are known as the best in the world, and I think mainly because of that radio influence. And I'm definitely conscious of it.
And the final SMS sums it up beautifully here. Hello, Michael. Can you please say thanks to Matt Hill for the way he calls? It doesn't matter whether it's a benchmark 64 at Ballarat or a Group 1 at headquarters. He is brilliant at what he does, and after the great Greg Miles, he makes racing just as exciting as it has ever been before. So thank you.
Oh, that's absolutely lovely. Thank you very much. If you can do the job and make a few people happy and have an enjoyable weekend, that's really lovely.
Hey, Matty, you've started very strong with the call of the week this week. I don't know how we're going to top it next week, but I'm looking forward to it already.
Well, look, I've found a few cassettes. I know you're keen on this. This is going to be very embarrassing, but I've already found the St. Ledger from Flemington from 1997 when I was 16. So next week we might have a chipmunk calling the St. Ledger from 1997. We've just got to get the technology right. Does anyone have a cassette player anymore? Because I don't think I've got one anymore.
The old VHS and Beta and the old cassette as well.
Things you used to put in your ghetto blaster and play. Has the radio station got them? Do they exist?
I'm sure RSN will have one of those. we might even be able to get your best summer hits of 88 put onto a DVD for you as well.
Now you're
good on you, Matty.
The old mixtape.
That is it.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Hey, Matty, great to catch up. Good calling this week. We'll do it all again next week.
For sure. Thanks, Michael.